Do you have somebody in your life who loves books?
Somebody who not only loves books, but always wants to share what she's reading, thinking that you're just going to love her latest selection?
And inevitably, you just can't stand that book that she suggested.
That's us. Mm-hmm. We both read a lot. Well, I don't even read. I listen, usually. But we very rarely agree on what constitutes a good read.
I enjoy books that build up new worlds, that invite magic and mystery into our lives. Science fiction and fantasy rule.
I listen to a variety, but it's all grounded in reality. You can keep your elves and space operas.
And anthropomorphized animals.
Sure.
Welcome to our podcast. You're making me read what? Your hosts on this monthly podcast are myself, Jessica, and my colleague, Christine. We're librarians who get a thrill out of a great book, but usually can't stand what the other person is reading.
We've each selected some of our all-time favorite books, and each month we'll alternate between the lists with the goal of persuading the other to enjoy a read she would never have picked up on her own.
Even a book that isn't entirely your style may have some redeeming qualities to it, right? I guess we'll see.
We will see.
Should we do a spoiler alert?
Absolutely.
I feel like there's a lot in this one.
There is a lot.
There's a lot of spoily moments.
There's
spoiled food.
There's spoiled carcasses.
There's just a lot of spoiled things in this one.
A lot of spoilage.
Yeah. Yes, accurate. So now's the time for us to warn you that we're going to discuss the whole book, including the ending and any magical twists, of which there are many in this one. If you haven't read the book yet, and this month's book is The Hollow Kingdom by Kira Jane Buxton. And you don't want us to spoil anything for you, please stop listening now and join us after you've read it. Period. I'm never going to read that part where it says,
or if
you decided you're not going to. Who wouldn't? This book was fantastic.
Tell us why.
How much time do I have? Okay, so first of all, I could not believe that we've been doing this for 4 years.
Yes.
And we've never read an apocalypse book.
Yeah, that seems unfair.
I don't think we have, right?
What about the android sheep dreaming?
That was post-apocalypse. That was like...
Oh, sorry. I don't have my timeline of apocalypses correct.
That was a book about a world where it's already happened. The life that they're living that they've always known is this, right?
Uh-huh.
The book that we read, The Hollow Kingdom, is about an apocalypse in progress. It is the disruption and the change that goes along with your life and your world being dismantled. I think those are very different.
Okay, but it's about 75% happened in this book. I mean, it is in progress.
We get to go along for the story, right?
Is that what we did?
We're there for the journey, not for the destination.
Okay, that might have answered one of my questions right there.
So just like a short question mark synopsis, because I'll probably just talk about it a lot. So this book... This also might be the first book that we've read where it's told from a viewpoint that's not a human, like, or an android or a human-esque thing.
Humanoid,
right? I think so. We've done so many of these now.
I know.
So this book is told through the vantage point of ST, who is a pet raven, crow. And he lives with his human, Big Jim. Mm-hmm. And Big Jim's so dumb. So dumb. Bloodhound Dennis.
Oh, but I thought you were going to stop with Big Jim's so dumb, because that is also true.
That is true. But no, his sadly intellectually incapable Bloodhound Dennis.
Yes, but instinctive?
Yes, very much so. He knows how to chase squirrels. He knows how to use his instincts.
And he knows how his ears are supposed to fluff all the scent to his nose so that he can, you know, do the nosy thing.
The nosy thing that bloodhounds do. Mm-hmm. So this book is told through the viewpoint of a bird, a domesticated animal. And he thinks he's a human.
He does.
He's just stuck in this weird bird body that he doesn't know what to do with.
And he idolizes humans, which is kind of weird.
Right? It was fascinating to kind of see as that developed over time. So one day... Just like any other day.
Normal day.
His human, Big Jim, hanging out in the backyard, goes back inside. His eyeball pops out.
Right.
And ST is like, huh, that's not normal. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to put it in a cookie jar because Big Jim could want it later.
Right.
And over the course of the book, you come to realize, because ST doesn't know what's going on. He's a crow. He doesn't have our knowledge of apocalypse or zombies. He comes to realize that the world has changed, that humans are not going to make it. And what we as readers see is that, you know, people are really just turning into zombies.
Yes.
They're not good. Things are not great for humanity.
They're grating down their fingers, rubbing their fingers against places like walls and brick walls and stuff. And then they're banging their heads into glass.
They sure are. And the main storyline here, after ST and Dennis get out, because Big Jim tries to eat them. Is they realize that all of these animals, all these domestics, all these pets are stuck in these houses, mm-hmm. and they can't get out because their people have just lost their minds,
and
literally.
Doorknobs.
And they don't have hands. They don't have thumbs.
No opposable thumbs.
So their goal throughout this book is to free the domesticated animals, to save those other pets that are stuck but that have loved their humans so deeply. And they succeed in some ways. Mm-hmm. They don't in others, mm-hmm. but they try. Mm-hmm. And it's ST's story of moving from this idolatry of humanity to saving this really slim portion of it in the animals that people loved so much and cared for them, into joining a murder of crows and defending their territory and kind of falling bird in love a little bit and trying to figure out what is going on because they don't know. And I don't like zombie stories that much because I'm a scaredy cat. I don't want to be freaked out. Mm-hmm. But I loved ST's voice. Mm-hmm. I thought he was so weird.
Very funny.
And so funny and so snarky and very inappropriate in ways. Like, I'm not going to tell people what ST stands for. You need to read it yourself.
Yes.
This is a family-friendly podcast,
yes.
generally speaking. But I liked the messaging behind this book. I liked the author's voice. I thought it was just fascinating.
Yeah.
What did you like about this book? Before you jump into the things you didn't like, did you like anything about it?
It's a pretty even list, actually.
Yay! Win!
Yes, I would say this is a win for you. I thought the writing was exceptionally good. And you know that that's like 80% for me.
Yeah.
If something is badly written, I just don't have time for it.
Yeah.
And
there's so many good books.
Yes, it's not worth wasting the time. I'm a super slow reader, which is why I normally listen. This was not available to listen to, and so I did have to read it, which again reminds me of why I always listen, because, oh my gosh, it just took me so long. I guess I process more quickly auditorily than I do visually.
Okay.
And so even when I was engaged, I had to reread things just because my brain just was not catching up the way that my ears do.
Well, and that's fascinating because I think you and I have the flip where I don't listen to audiobooks very often because I feel like I'm not paying enough attention.
Yeah.
And so I often have to rewind and go back and listen again because I'm just – my attention is split.
I can remember from years ago what part of the garden I was weeding when I was listening to this book or that book or another book because I just – and I don't – it's not intentional.
Yeah.
But I was engaged in this book and I was falling asleep because I just – it just is so hard for me to pay attention. And I never was – I mean, maybe I do have some kind of a learning disability or a processing issue. I was never diagnosed as such. I just have always been a super, super slow reader and have struggled. And I remember as a kid, I would put my fingers in between the pages to mark how many pages I had until I was done for the evening.
Ah.
And it was like torture. Like, oh my gosh, I have three more fingers worth of pages. So anyway, reading is...
Every brain is a miracle.
Tough. Yeah, that's true.
Don't be mean to your brain.
Okay, well... I loved the writing, and I loved her humor. There's humor throughout the book, and it is really, really funny. Some of it is completely inappropriate, which I also loved.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of, potty humor. There's a lot of cursing, which does not faze me at all, but just as a little, if that's not your gig, this may not be your book.
So right towards the start of the book, so Big Jim's eyeball has fallen out.
Sure.
And ST is like, I got to help him. I just got to do things. So he's pulling out pills from the medicine cabinet home and just like flinging them at Big Jim's face. That doesn't do anything.
Right.
And he thinks to himself, you know what? Those humans, they have medicine.
Yep.
I'm just going to go get some.
Yep.
So he goes to what I assume CVS. Is like a CVS or Walgreens or something. And there's some zombies in there, so he's going to be careful. Mm-hmm. But he grabs a bag. He dumps stuff in there. Mm-hmm. So he's got like some lady yeast infection medicine. Mm-hmm. That might work. We don't know.
Sure.
He's got ADHD medication. Sure. Put it in there. Just everything he can grab.
Anything his little beak will poke into
Absolutely.
The bag.
Mm-hmm. So then he and Dennis are trying afterwards, like, how can we get this pill in Big Jim's bag? And Dennis doesn't talk. He is portrayed as being maybe not as evolved as the birds in this world. But you can tell he's like, I can help too. Let's figure this out.
Oh, yeah. He's super loyal.
Yeah. And it's just the silliest stuff. It was very amusing to read and to think, okay, it's both the direct humor that's on the page and the overlay of what we as a human reader are assuming about situations that they don't directly print.
Yeah. I think she does a really nice job of showing networks, different networks among and between the species and the subspecies, and it's very entertaining. I think she does a really nice job at that.
Agreed.
I also loved, there's an African gray parrot named Gabari.
Mm-hmm.
And throughout the story, you don't know what this virus is that's affecting the humans.
Nope.
You know that really bad things are happening to them, and it's consistent, and you're watching them just degrade and become these weirdo zombies.
Yep.
But you don't know, there's no explanation.
Nope.
And at the very end of the book, Gabari, she uses him in a terrific way to explain, because he mimics the voices of his owner.
Yep. And they were in the hospital.
Was afflicted, talking to a doctor whose daughter had been afflicted.
Yeah.
So he mimics both voices, and ST knows Rohan, the owner's voice, so he knows exactly what's going on. So it's, I think, a really effective way of telling that story that's true to the book and also gets the
point.
Information across. Mm-hmm. So I was wowed by that. I thought that was lovely.
So I'll mention several times throughout this recording, I don't like zombie books. I don't like the idea of zombies. This is going to be way too much information, but I live along coastlines with which I can get on a boat and go away.
Uh-huh.
And I think I would have a very hard time living in, I don't know, say a middle state where I could not flee if need be, right?
Zombie
fodder.
Surrounded.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's
good to have an escape plan.
I don't actually think that zombies are going to happen or are real.
But why tempt it?
That, right? I'm good. I'm going to stay right here on a coastline. And so I don't read a ton of zombie books because they tend to be really, they're supposed to scare you that this is a thing that could happen. But the mechanism that she used for these, like what you find out throughout the course of this book as ST and Dennis are trying to save these domesticated animals, is that humans, or what's left of them, are drawn to technology. And so they find a cell phone, and all the zombies, like, their heads crane around 180 degrees, and they book it. They are coming to get you. They will trample
you. Moth to a flame.
Because they want that technology.
Mm-hmm.
And you learn throughout this that it's humanity's obsession with screens and devices and technology that has made them susceptible to whatever it is that has turned them into zombies.
Right.
And I think that was a really interesting twist on humanity's downfall, that it's the balance between kind of the environmental degradation that they talk about, where you can see over the course of this book as ST joins a murder of crows and as they're defending their territory and trying to free these animals, you can see that Mother Earth and these animals are taking their spaces back.
Right.
And it did not take long.
Nope.
So the balance of technology was too much for us, we didn't use it appropriately, and it's turned it into mindless zombies. And that's okay with most of the animals because they're just going to be fine. They're going to take it back anyway.
They're done with us.
Yeah, they're good.
Well, and another aspect of the human problem is that they have severed their relationships with animals. So they're not paying attention anymore. They're not paying attention to the environment. They're not paying attention to the animals. So they're so disconnected. They're only connected by choice to this technology, which has made them just crazy.
Well, so the title of the book is Hollow Kingdom.
Right.
And I don't know, maybe a third of the way in or not too far in, you learn that animals call humans hollows because they're not connected to each other, that there is no reverberation of our understanding of each other as humans to our understanding of invertebrates or mammals or nature or anything.
Right.
That we have segmented ourselves so much into this little narrow scope of what we think is valued and what we think deserves our time and energy, that everything else is like, yeah, you guys are sad.
You can fend for yourselves. We're ignoring you.
Yeah, we're going to be okay doing everything else, you know, until the zombies start mutating and try to attack them. Then they don't like it as much. But I thought that was really – I liked that she used humor in her writing and some tropes, but not a huge amount of them, to push forward a message like, hey, humans – maybe
pay a little attention.
Maybe a little screen time. I don't know. Maybe go look at a bird once in a while. Play around in the dirt. I don't know.
She seems like somebody that I'd like to have a beer with.
Yes.
You know, like I think she seemed very sympathetic. It's clear that she did a ton of research because she would sprinkle a little tips about these animals, like little like factoids that I found charming. And I'm confident that they are accurate. I don't think she just made stuff up. I think it is accurate to their behavior and their, you know, activities.
Yeah. Was there anything about this book that you're like, no, thank you?
There were a couple of things. It became a little tedious in places to me.
It drug a little bit.
I'm just not interested. Like when you said at the beginning, it was the journey. Mm-hmm. I don't need to list every street that they were on and the color of every house and what kind of plants were retaking back the area. That was a little much for me.
I will see that point.
Nothing bad about it. I just thought it was overdone.
I didn't like the zombie mutations.
They were...
Did not like them.
They
mm-hmm.
were...
Mm-mm. Pass.
I frankly thought they were dumb. Yeah, I just thought they were like ostrich people. Nope.
Yeah, that part was kind of funny. I was like, I can't really picture that. But so over the course of the book, the zombies are mutating.
They are at record speed.
At record speed, because you know that's a trope. But also to adapt to the environment because it's not working out for them otherwise.
Right.
And the one that freaked me out were the ones that were like spider peoples.
Yeah.
And I like spiders just fine.
Right.
But I don't like people-sized spiders.
Right.
That feels like I would die. I feel like I would have a hard time with that.
Yeah.
And I would get caught and cocooned. So there were some of them where, you know, some of them were unrealistic. And some of them just, it was too scary for me. I very quickly skimmed through some of those pages. Like, and still spiders. Okay, good. Next. I can read again. I'm good on that one. I thought that one was interesting. I wasn't sure how you would feel about the ending because there is a second book which is out now. It's called Feral Creatures, which I have read, and I assume you have not. Because
I have not, oddly.
Oddly enough. But maybe you will because you like the writer's author's writing so much. So at the end of the book, this is a big spoiler.
Go ahead.
So Dennis dies.
Yeah.
I know, it was
poor
very sad. And he doesn't even die doing something heroic. He dies because he's chasing a
UPS car. Man. That is heroic in canine speak.
That's
that is
what it was.
That they're archenemies. He can't not do it.
But it wasn't like he was like, I'm going to save ST.
No.
I'm going to take on a herd of zombies.
No.
Nope. But he was like, oh, UPS truck. Oh, I'm going to get it.
Doink.
Yes. And then he dies. And everyone's really sad. Mm-hmm. And ST is having a really hard time with it because that's his last true connection to his life before.
Right.
And so at the very end of the book, the birds take him up to this far remote Canadian village. And he thinks they're taking him to a little bloodhound doggy baby. He thinks he's going to get his own puppy.
And yet?
And then he gets a human baby.
What a disappointment.
And like he's like, interesting.
Does he call it nestling?
Yeah.
Nestling.
Yeah. So this book, you assume, is not written, but he's been telling it like as an oral history for this baby he found.
Because he does say you.
You.
Yeah, he addresses
you at the end.
Yep.
You're going to have to turn all this nonsense around. And I'm not going to tell you how the next book goes, but it was a really interesting continuation of the story. And I suggest you read it.
Well, I will say that I was very relieved. I was worried when the orangutan comes and puts his hands on Dennis after Dennis has died.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, no, if there's some magic here and he gets...
He's alive!
Brought back to, you know,
canine
happiness, I'm going to be like, that's it. I'm out.
No.
But so I was glad that she did not do that. That annoys me in fantasy books where sometimes the players come back into and sometimes the inconsistency makes me a little crazy.
One of the things that I really liked about this book, and I don't know if the author meant for it to come across this way, but I connected with it this way.
Mm-hmm.
So at the beginning of the book and really up through almost past the middle point, ST the Crow identifies as a human.
Mm-hmm.
He was found by Big Jim as a nestling, and he was raised with this dog and this human. And Big Jim, the person, doesn't sound like he was a great human being.
No, he was not.
He sounds fine, but he was, you know...
A
little rough around the edges, right? Had a lot of redeeming qualities, but the stories that we heard, you're like,
he had a redeeming quality or two.
Yes, he had some goodness in there, and he bought ST all the Cheetos he wanted.
True,
right? So like he loved his people.
Sure,
he didn't love all the people.
No, he did not.
No, he did not. But he had some redeeming.
He
qualities.
Tried.
He did, and so ST he sees these other birds flying around, and he's like, no, I'm good.
Yeah.
Like, I'm a human. I'm going to hang out here.
Leave me alone.
And he calls all the humans mofos because that's what Big Jim called them, which is kind of funny as you're reading through, too.
Right.
And throughout the middle and the end of the book, he joins a murder of crows. He gets more in tune with his crow family.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, it read a lot like an adoption story, like a human adoption story.
Interesting. Okay.
Around assimilation of culture and assimilation of identity.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, if these were human peoples, you know, maybe Big Jim is a white man, mm-hmm. and he adopted someone who was not a white child.
Mm-hmm.
And so he has assimilated at the start of his life into this culture that is not entirely his own.
Mm-hmm.
And it's only when he gets more in tune and in touch with communities that are more like him,
mm-hmm.
that he comes to appreciate these aspects of himself that he didn't even notice beforehand.
Right.
And I picked up on that a lot as mm-hmm. I was reading through, and I thought, oh, this is kind of fascinating. I wonder if the author meant to do this,
mm-hmm.
or if it was just an interesting side product.
Yeah, that's an interesting perspective. I didn't think of it in those terms, but yeah, that maps.
Yeah. So I like this book a lot. I tried to do some research on the author like we normally do.
Yeah.
She's a mystery.
Oh, good for her.
Like, there was not a lot online about her. She lives in Seattle.
Yep.
She's only written these two books so far.
Right.
She's done a couple of other small things. And the book was nominated for a couple of awards, including the year it came out for a humor book award. Thurber, something like that.
Okay.
But I didn't really find a lot about her. So,
well, the flap of the
we
book.
Like her.
The flap of the book says that she has a crow or two.
Why not?
Two crows and a charm of hummingbirds.
Okay, that's an amazing name for a group.
Yeah.
Yes.
So I think I would like to have a beer with her. She sounds like a really interesting, and the acknowledgments have a lengthy thing about people who take the time to rescue animals. So she's definitely a soft-hearted, you know, and she, in order to make the observations she makes in the book, she has to be paying attention.
Yeah.
So I think she would be a fascinating person to talk to.
Okay, new friend, Ms. Kira Jane Buxton,
mm-hmm.
hit us up. We want to be buddies. We don't live in Seattle.
Come on over for a beer.
Yeah. Well, for you.
And I did love that it was set in Seattle because I'm done with books set in the same five settings. And so this was kind of refreshing to learn a little bit more, even though it was really very background and everything had dilapidated by the time we got there. But, you know.
You mean you don't want to go to the Seattle Zoo and see it overtaken? By zombies.
By zombies and everything wrecked. Yeah.
Yeah.
Not as much.
And one orangutan just hanging out that they thought was a red-haired man for a while.
Yeah, that was weird.
Yeah.
And I didn't – that brings me one other point that I was confused for a lot of the book, which may not surprise you, because she is sort of unclear intentionally about – because it's all from a bird's perspective and the bird is interpreting what it sees without the kind of context that humans have. So there was a lot of like – this person is this, or the like titles that I had trouble figuring out. So I was a little slow on the uptake on some of it.
Yeah, it's like a untrustworthy narrator
kind
of scenario.
Exactly like that.
Where it's supposed to be that way in some instances, although it sounds like maybe that was just a little extra.
For you.
Yeah. So I am glad that you didn't hate this book.
I did not. I would give it a solid B.
I am incredibly surprised and delighted, and I'm going to take this for the extraordinary win that it is. Tell me what we're reading next month.
Well, I don't know if you know this, but next month may be the last pick for me.
I don't know that. I don't know that to be accurate. I think you're wrong.
Okay. Well, it might be.
It will never be.
So I'm going to, I think, end us on a hopeful note. And it's called Peace Is Every Step by Thich Nhat Hanh. And it's a short read. I don't know if you've read it before.
I have not.
But it's a little woo-woo-y.
I'm ready for it.
But I think some of it will speak to everybody.
If you just read a book about an anthropomorphized crow, like I can do a little book about peace. I think we'll be okay.
Fair enough. Well, on that note, thank you for joining us on You're Making Me Read What?
Even if this book wasn't your cup of tea, there are millions more where that came from.
And don't forget, you can always grab these books and lots more at your local library.
So join us next month when we will be discussing Peace Is Every Step by Thich Nhat Hanh. Thank you so much and keep on reading.